Welcome to Star Trek Trek Trek, our ongoing journey through the episodes of Star Trek and told in some sort of order. We are here to talk about where no one has gone before, not where no man, no one has gone before, the intergalactic adventure of Picard and co. as they get transported and whisked off to other galaxies at the behest of a slightly unusually four-headed alien of the week. Hi guys, what did you think of this episode? Early TNG.
Well, hold on. Since Shai stopped composting for a second to join us, let's ask him first.
I mean, I heard all your snark and your derision towards this fine, basic episode of sci-fi. I'm a great defender of season one. I think this is solid, straightforward, where no one has gone before storytelling. You know, you're going to come down on Star Trek for, like, we all have to, like, wish really hard together. Like, are you going to come down on Dr. Hoover doing the exact same thing 20 years later to defeat the master? Are you going to, like, come down on...
I also thought that was a bit lame, to be fair.
No, yeah, it was. It's generally a lame trope, but it's a joke. You gotta do it, right? You gotta hit all your touch all the bases when you're playing baseball. And before you go home, you gotta round all the bases.
No, so I agree that the idea and the concepts were good, especially for the time. The execution was murderously bad.
The only I think the only thing I really didn't like, because
the only thing,
well, was just generally the kind of Traveler and Wesley interactions, and a little bit of the kind of, they had that early TNG feel of everyone's just a bit too up themselves, no one's kind of relaxed like they are in later seasons, and it's a bit more kind of like, oh, everyone's gonna be a fetter, we're doing this and blah blah blah, we're going straight to the action and here, there, and there's a few reaction shots, including the very humorous Asian guy in the scant who just wanders on the scene and goes, huh, and then walks off and gets along with his day. But I love when they kind of, like, they're exploring other, like, it is the scene. That's the Star Trek. The triggers aren't working at the moment. That's the Star Trek. You know, this
no,
feels...
No, you don't get to use it on this episode.
I kind of do a little bit, because this kind of feels like, a little bit like, the motion picture to me. Not just because of the weird warp effect, but because they are doing
it's
something...
It's not a strong argument.
They are doing something... I'm going to keep talking. They are doing something very Star Trek, and they are visiting another galaxy. They are going where no... Literally, in the episode, they do go where no one has gone before. It's not like in TOS, where they kind of just explore, you know, the limits of human consciousness. They go out to, like, uncharted space where space and time have no meaning. It's just a shame that they kind of don't do anything with it other than this weird relationship that Wesley has with this strangely deformed creature with the big thumb.
Yeah, this is...
I like hands like that.
Okay,
well,
thanks.
I'm a big fan of... You ever seen Battle Beyond the Stars? The like... all white aliens that have to, like, operate their ship in a group, and they have those, like, hands like that, and then the evil villain cuts off one of their arms and, like, sews it to himself because that's his fetish, where he takes on the body parts of other...
That's... Wait, what's his legs?
Anyway, please continue. No, Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, right.
Like, one of many Star Wars knockoffs of the 70s, okay. 80s. Please continue, Stars.
I need to add that to my list of things never to watch. Thank you, Shai.
No, it's great. Please.
Please, I'm doing it? Such a bad job of selling
it. Is this something you started in your youth?
Yeah. All right. So, you know what this episode is? This episode is a casualty of being TNG season one, because I feel like if you did this in any other season, you would have been able to use the concepts that they use in it for, like, you know, 2 minutes to tell a really compelling story. But as it is, you get two people looking at their pets, someone plays some music, someone does some ballet dancing, and a guy sees a fire, and then Picard looks at his old mum, and that's it. Like, Memo. There's no... there's no actual development. No one really changes in this episode apart from Wesley a bit, and I guess a tiny bit Picard, but it's like, cool, thank you for drilling down on the parts of the season that weren't really working for anyone. Like, I don't hate Wesley like, you know, the fandom does, but, like, this is not his best showing. Like, just having a weird relationship with an older man.
Before we start, and I'm going to call you out. I don't mean to call you out. Not confrontational. But before we start, you said we finally get some character development in Star Trek. You were excited for it. So what what were you remembering that was that didn't come through on this watch?
I don't know, I just thought the scenes of like Yar and Worf and like Picard like talking to like, you know, their pets and their mother like went on for a bit longer and revealed a bit more about their character. But instead it's like you get maybe 10 seconds of this is a part of the, you know, the character's history that you didn't know about, and then it immediately becomes about the kind of uninteresting thing of where are we? And it's like you're in a place where that allows this plot conceit to happen. We aren't going to get into any specifics. The most you ever get about what is actually outside in these other galaxies. Oh well, there's a protostar over there.
Yeah, like, a little bit.
There's no actual like for a science vessel. There's no wonderment at like what the fuck was that blue shit? What was the lights? What was that? I don't know. They didn't tell me.
So unknown. They didn't know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, in later seasons, they would have stayed around for a while and explored a little bit before they tried to go back.
Or at least they intimated using a sensor scan. Oh man, there's all kind of weird particles and shit on the element of the periodic table I can't even identify. Like, do at least like, some legwork to try and ground this in science before you go in on the thoughts of power bullshit. Like, come on, guys.
That was the biggest drawback is... Because we did, when we were watching it, I likened it to Subspace Rhapsody, where, you know, marshal your thoughts and through the power of magical thinking, we'll fix this. But I did say when we watched that, they did their very best to weave in as much technobabble as they could to try to make it feel Star Trek. This did absolutely none of that. It was all thought concepts and, like, it was what a lot more like what sci-fi was of the era, where... You know, big imagination instead of the gritty details that the nerds like us have come to expect.
It's more than the sum of its parts, or it's like it's more than like you can understand. So, you know, get swept in the like which, 2001 Space Odyssey, that kind of stuff.
Which they started with the trope of my name is unpronounceable by humans. That's when you knew it was going down that kind of road.
My name is unpronounceable by humans. You know, this is a realistic thing.
Oh my god. All right, yeah, so like, I don't feel like this episode is offensively bad, because I'm thinking about what came before. So we had Encounter at Farpoint, we had The Naked Now, we had Code of Honor.
Yeah.
Like,
this is probably the first one where people kind of go like, yeah, okay, right, yeah.
There's something here. There are glimmerings of an actual show that is about something here, rather than a collection of just tropes. Here I have I have a handful of dust and some tropes. Like, that's what I've got right now. There are glimmerings of good acting, like Patrick Stewart, you know, guess what, fucking there's many a bad episode and good episode that's hinged on his performance, and his performance when he's talking to like to his mother is actually really, really very good. And I also think Michael Dorn does a really good job with the Targ. Denise Crosby's line reads could have been a bit better, but like I don't think anyone is necessarily like awful in this episode, but they just don't get a ton to do if your name isn't Wesley or the Traveler.
Or Picard. Picard had a lot in this as well, and Riker as well, kind of. Well, Riker was mostly stomping about looking annoyed at everyone, but...
Yeah.
See, that's one of the things I like about season one of TNG, the sort of adversarial relationship between Picard and Riker, where he's still, you know, the legendary captain, and Riker's still trying to make an impression. And, you know, speaking of character development and relationship development, this is where Picard and Riker, at the end, have their little, you know, dumb show in front of Wesley before they promote him.
Yeah,
you actually see that. Like, they actually start having some of that camaraderie. And Riker's relationship with Wesley really grows in this episode, because he's still dismissive of him at the beginning. Obviously, that's why he, like, ignores him until he realizes that he's, you know, smarter than everyone else on the ship, because he's Mary Sue Crusher.
So to what extent... To what extent did Denise Crosby in a leather choker elevate this episode?
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
In terms of television, cinema, yeah.
It's okay, because it's like Alien. She's got a cat.
I honestly did remember the cat being named Jonesy, because it does look exactly like the cat from Alien.
Yeah.
I remembered it being called Jonesy.
So this episode was written by Diane Day, like, who has, well, is just prolific all over Trek. So this is one of the classic, like, the Diane was one of the people that Gene Roddenberry went to and went, yeah, you're going to write everything for us. But she's done like loads of stuff, loads of books,
Co-writer of this episode.
The name is very familiar with the books.
Yeah, a lot of books and a lot of sort of world building.
Did she do the Romulan novels? Like the
she
Jalan
did, yes.
Stuff?
My Enemy, My Ally, The Romulan Way, and all that kind of stuff as well. And also co-written by Michael Reeves. And this was the only thing he wrote for Star Trek. So apart from some fan-made stuff as well as Gargoyles. Gargoyles was his big one.
He's better suited to that kind of drama.
Yeah, and directed by Rob Bowman, who did a lot of season one
episodes.
Maybe
that's why Riker is so villainous. He's not playing Riker in this episode, he's playing Xanatos.
He's playing Xanatos, yes. Rob Bowman has also done a lot of season one. He's going to be a lot upcoming, like Data Law, The Battle, Heart of Glory. He also did The Child and some season two. I think the last one he did was Brothers from season four. So he did Shades of Grey as well, so...
Oh no!
He did.
That's
terrible.
He did give us that GoPro shot from between Picard's thighs. So,
it's a heroic shot. You're looking up at the hero. Just why it has to be crotch level is.
To be fair, they played around with lighting so much in this episode. There was the red alert, the klaxon blinking. We had the TOS light on Stewart's eyes. They lit him from every conceivable angle in this episode because they realized his bone structure is just made for TV. So,
well, I also feel like it's a case of, oh, we blew our effects budget and all the cool galaxy effects. We need to make the inside drama look better because there's nothing else going on. We spent all our money on this stinky, stinky pig.
I did like it. The effects were very good. Like when they did the whole warp, go to warp, and they had that kind of whiplash. Whoosh, whoosh, you know, you felt like shit's going down because they're flying past nebula and galaxies and all this kind of stuff. It feels like they kind of encapsulates that. Oh wow, this is bigger than anything else. I like that. I like when they kind of go. Apart from Data's line, we're going
it's
beyond
an attempt
warp 10,
at visual flair, which TNG season one is not. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's like TOS season one when they're really going for it with some like innovative cinematography, and it's just interesting to see.
You gotta think this is the 80s. Like, what else on television is like this? This was like the hottest show because of things like this. No one was seeing spaceships on television unless they were terribly done. Like, the science fiction was dead up until TNG for the most part, apart from like the Twilight Zone remake, things like that.
Mm. All right, so we have to talk about the elephant in the room.
Go on. Oh dear.
We have to talk about Kaczynski.
I'll give someone.
Guess
one,
what?
I'll give one credit for it. His actor was great.
I thought Traveler was the elephant
dickhead
in the room.
What? He's good at playing a dickhead. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
he nails it.
He does. He does really good work. Like, the actor is nails that kind of nervous arrogance, as it were.
I don't know. I feel like that character should have been its own episode. I feel like there's something to be done with that character type that's more than, by the way, I'm a complete fake. Like, I don't know. I feel the two concepts don't really marry together. But then again, I feel maybe that's just me saying that, hey, I don't want any of the Traveler around. being avoidance.
It hinges on someone more competent being behind him to make him... Otherwise, he wouldn't have that arrogance coming in if he hadn't been successful elsewhere. So I think they do kind of rely on each other.
Yeah, yes. They've had a couple of con men episodes, right? You have Ardra, you got like Rasmussen. Yeah.
Rasmussen.
Time travel. Yeah, there's a bunch of
Mud.
Con men. I mean, this just happens to be an in-house
con. All right, here's a question. Do you think he really thought he was that good? Or he maybe had some inklings that he wasn't, but he just wanted to put up a good front.
The theory is, like, he just comes out and goes, yes, it's the quantum entanglement doobly Laris mater or whatever. And everyone just goes, oh, that's gibberish, but it works. And, you got to wonder what's going through his head. It's like, yeah, I think it's a little bit of it. He's like, yeah, I know I'm a con man, but it's working.
He's a template for Silicon Valley tech bros. Like, every other tech bro is Kaczynski. I mean, it's not
synergy,
not realistic.
Synergy.
I have this new inter-ship communication system. Is it going to call it X? You're going to have to pay $1 a month.
No, I tell you what, he's the guy on the ship and says, like, what if I could, you could see this image, right? You can own this image, like, you can own a receipt of this image, and I'm going to call it
You
NFT.
Can own this Elkar's image.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like there probably was a point when he first did this entire shtick, and he probably did it and was like, yeah, that was me, and then he went home and cried. Yeah. Like, he was crying in his quarters because he's like, what my God. But at this point, I feel like he's kind of bought into his own hype a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of puffing himself up. And then, it, you know, he does a good job. I just feel like...
I kind of know what that feels.
I mean, would have... I wanted more Kaczynski than Traveler because he's less creepy than King Traveler.
You know, they should have... They should have him on Lower Decks.
Oh, where... yeah.
Oh, because
here's the thing.
That'd be a good poll.
He was actually... Okay.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit, Sean.
Sorry.
Just a little bit. You're right.
But, yeah, he's probably an okay engineer. He probably got like a 0.05 on engine performance at some point. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's where he is, like, at an engine. So he would actually mesh with me.
Oh, no.
On a California console.
No, you broke up a bit left. Sorry, Shy. sorry. No, the one thing...
Hey, but your raised bed looks fantastic.
It's just amazing. That's what happens.
He's growing garlic, by the way.
Couldn't make a bed like that.
By the way, for anyone watching, this is the view from Shai's house. Look at that. That's incredible.
Incredible. Beautiful.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
So the concepts were good, and, you know, in the era, it was probably... I guess, you know, because we've talked about this more recently, episodes have aged good and aged bad.
Mm.
I think this would be one of those ones that aged poorly, but at the time probably was better.
Yeah.
And it actually reminds me, because we've talked about it recently, Stars, reminds me a little bit of the Outcast, where now it seems goofier, but at the time there wasn't a lot on TV like that. So
yeah.
It was probably better.
I guess. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But just the stuff that clangs against your ears, like the phrase rape gang and the stuff with Traveler and Wesley,
that
which,
was weird.
You know, at the time, you know,
it's innocent as fuck. Like, there's nothing malicious or sordid about it, but we have the modern, you know, contemporary 21st century view on such things, and it's a little bit like, Jesus, we've had a lot of people come out of the woodwork that are, you know, explicitly kind of doing that kind of grooming, and yeah, by all means, like, there is absolutely nothing there. It's literally an innocent, you know, bonding between a supernatural intelligence and someone that has a lot of potential to elevate themselves to that scene, but it just wasn't shot very well.
Okay, here's one, which Stars called out, plot hole. Like, Riker and Argyle were opposing the Traveler at every point in the first, and Kaczynski at every point, like the first 25 minutes of the episode. Wesley comes to him. He's like, "Sir, I have proof that you're right, and this guy's a fraud." And he's like, "I can't listen to you right now, Wesley." Yeah. And he tries to tell him twice. He's like, "No, go away." And it's like, all right, that's a little bit of a plot hole there. I know everyone's like supposed to hate Wesley until he turns into the godchild, but it's like, can we not write that specific scene and make Riker look like an even bigger dumbbell?
I think
you know what? There should have been a scene. There should have been a bit where, like, Riker... they should have done another small test that has nothing going on. He doesn't see the Traveler doing anything. He's like, cool, Wes, I gave you the benefit of the doubt, and I wasted my time. I wasn't paying attention to Kaczynski when I should have, and now it's your fault. And then he dismisses him, and that explains it. Like,
yeah, I think,
that's kind of how they should have played it. More time on that and less time on people having imaginary violin solos might have been a better idea.
They did make up for it, because, right, you know, very mature for a kind of 80s TV show for one of the sort of the big male images at the time to go, no, wait, I was wrong. The child was right. Actually, it's my fault. I dismissed him. And that
Worry. There's plenty of that in TNG season one.
I know. But that was actually kind of a mature moment I wasn't expecting. I was kind of expecting to go, like, sort of play it off or just kind of ignore it entirely. But actually, you know, for a positive male image of someone going, no, I was at fault here, is actually kind of refreshing for that era.
Well, then give it, then have him, like, back Kaczynski, be like, say Riker, like, oh, I believe him. But then... Wesley tries to point out that he's a fraud. You could do anything to still keep that dynamic without that plot hole of like, I'm backing you up. Why are you dismissing me? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Let's talk about that 8-minute scene.
No, I think it is a problem. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because it's like, yeah, I know that this episode is definitely kind of, you know, relatively speaking, swinging for the fences with sci-fi. But it's like, it really does hurt the character drama and the entire point of the actual point of the episode, which is kind of Wesley's growth as a character, when you have this character flip flop and undermine himself and just arbitrarily, you know, go back on it, because it makes you look upon Riker unfavorably. And it's like, I don't think that was the intention. You're kind of meant to just play along with the fiction. It's like, well, no, I'm watching this as a fucking, you know, adult with a working brain. Like, why is Riker being a dick?
Well, Namer's right, though. That's another era thing. Because if you watch a lot of a lot of old-timey shows, it is, that's such a common trope, is like where the kid sees something that the adults don't see, and we watch it from his perspective, and they dismiss him and dismiss him, and then he's right in the end. So they do that a lot more, I think, back in the day.
Yeah, they actually had to, on Sesame Street, they used to have a character called Mr. Cephalophagus that only Big Bird would see. And they changed that because they realized it was causing kids to, like, be afraid of not being believed by adults. So if something bad happened to kids, they were like, they wanted kids to be able to go to adults and say, this happened, and have and be believed. So they actually changed that on Sesame Street. So, but,
Who knew? Who knew we were going to get a Sesame Street fact tonight?
Yeah, I know. There you go.
Didn't have that on my bingo card.
We're probably spending way too long on this already, but what did you think, because we panned it during the watch-along, that like 8 to 9 minute scene in sickbay where they're just discussing concepts? And
yeah, you guys were dismissing it as being talky. I kind of liked it. I mean, it was kind of basic talking, understand. Though. Yeah, yeah, but any chance... to let
it just,
you know,
felt kind of cyclical to me. It was just kind of like thought is powerful, thought, and it's like, can we get onto a new idea, like for a conversation hold about on. Thought I didn't feel like there was a lot of ideas going on.
Hold on, let Shai finish. We're piling on the compost man here.
Sure.
No, I'm, because I like talky sci-fi. I like you know, the like your Arrivals.
Oh, Arrivals, so
know,
good.
Even parts of. Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, but you're right. It could have used another pass, the script, to sort of have those scenes.
Just make it a bit tighter and a bit less cyclical is what I would have wanted. Yeah.
But they're all good actors, you know.
A concept of higher sci-fi, but not kind of pulled off well enough. Like a being that comes from another dimension to kind of elevate and lift up the race, but only told through the words of someone that's read the dictionary once and thought, I know all the words. I've got the amazing words.
I know all the words.
It was kind of like, it was like first half... Prodigy season one, where it was kind of almost directed towards kids, right? Yeah. Like using a Mozart as your analogy is very basic.
Well, yeah, it's also like the condescending way he speaks to Picard is like simultaneously annoying, because it's like, yes, I'm a man called Jean-Luc Picard. Do you think I don't know who the fuck Mozart was? And it's also, but it's also kind of fitting for the character that he is, where he's like, well, to be brutally honest, you weren't very interesting until recently, which I think is one of the few bits of the script that's like kind of hinting at a wider arc for the series of like humanity is finally worth paying attention. Like, there's glimmers of it in there, but it's like, yeah, like Mozart was just the wrong one to pick. It's just too basic.
I mean, that's the theme of the whole first season, right? The first episode of Encounter Four. Like, now you guys are ready.
That's kind of thing, one thing Star Trek has kind of abandoned, hasn't it? It has kind of abandoned that kind of humanity evolving into sort of something more than itself. But yeah, maybe we'll go back onto it. One thing. Yeah. Go on.
Because I see that a lot on forums and in circles of discussion about Trek, is they're like, oh, I miss the optimistic Star Trek. Everything is so dystopian these days. So I get that.
One, before we go on to best worst moments, one thing I would like to do, who do you think, like, we got a few new little sections we're throwing in. One is like, what modern day actor to replace this role? Who do you think this day and age could play Kaczynski? Who would you find as the best Kaczynski from our modern day suave list of actors or actresses?
Yeah, I only watch made-for-TV movies from the 90s, so my reference is going to be a little bit out of date.
I mean, John Mulaney.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Just like play him a bit more comedically, but I feel like he's got that kind of energy. I feel like he could do it. I could do it. I could see that.
I would say Jeremy Strong from Succession. Right.
That's a pick.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like he, like, he's bullshitting his way through half of the things on that show, if you've ever watched Succession.
Who's the guy that's in every kind of like Loads of like comedy, like modern comedies, but there's also he voiced the Lego Batman. What was his name?
Oh, Will John Arnett. Hamm?
Yeah, Will Arnett.
Oh no,
that's the one.
Yeah, Will Arnett. The other one. Yeah, no, yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
he'd do great. I think Will Arnett, he'd be fun. Yeah. Okay, best moments. Oh, go on.
First, I would put the Traveler in lifts, make him a little bit taller, and then I would cast Jack Black as Kaczynski because I want to see the energy that he brings. To that role.
That's great. That's a good one.
But you have to accentuate the height disparity first.
A full Tropic Thunder moment. I've always been this tall. Okay, best moments or worst moments of the episode, please. Stars, start us off.
Okay. Ooh, this is tricky. So, okay, I'm going to take the easy, low-hanging fruit here. I'm going to say that the best moment was Picard and his mother in the hallway. I feel like that was just... It's one of the few parts of the episode that has a genuine emotion that's not, like, you know, general irritation or uptightness or frustration or what's going on. It's like, no, there's a tender connection there. And even though it kind of digresses into what's going on, it's like, there's still a tenderness there. And guess what? Patrick Stewart never misses a beat, especially in TNG. Like, actual,
I mean,
TNG.
Bearing in mind that season two is pretty much a dumpster, season two of Picard is a dumpster fire of a season. Like, the whole expanding on Picard's mother thing was one of the things I liked. And kind of in retrospect, looking back to this series, and you see Patrick Stewart,
makes it even sadder.
It makes it very sad, and he still acts like he acts stunned. And if you apply that kind of season two Picard knowledge back to this scene, it's like, oh shit, that's actually kind of cool and almost justifies that terrible season.
Almost. But yeah, that'd be my pick for the best. Worst moment.
It was a strong hair flip, by the way.
Thank you, I appreciate that. It is gotta be. I hate Kaczynski. Kaczynski's a fraud. Hey, Commander Riker, I have proof that Kaczynski's a fraud. Not now, Wesley. That's my worst. Sorry, it just bugs the fuck out of me. Like, don't have your script talk at cross purposes like that. It's so bad.
All right, Idle, you next. Put you last and then steal your material.
Okay, well, since I've got a bit of priority, I'm going to go for my best moment was definitely the VFX, as we had that hard-hitting warp and them feeling like they were traveling through the galaxy and shit's going wild, and you actually kind of got there was good like SFX work done for like how that was portrayed. I really enjoyed that. Worst moment would probably be Troy right at the start where Kaczynski beams over and she's like, I'm sensing he has a lot of arrogance and he's full of himself, and we're like, no shit, like, add this to the Troy states. You know what, I'm gonna start a new score. Troy states the obvious score, and that is number one on the Troy states the obvious score.
Is it really only number one? I feel like it must be on number two or
probably
three, right?
But this is where I'm counting it from. Number one, there we go, she has one so far. All right, Shy, best worst moments.
I think my best moment is their little dumb show play at the end.
Yeah, sorry, you're breaking up again.
Shows like, no, did you hear any of that? I like the little
the
play they
show.
Put on.
Yeah, the dumb show at the end.
Basically at the end. And my worst moment is anytime a show hires actors to play musicians who can't. Like, you know, they don't have to be pro musicians. You know, you're gonna stick the aged guy in a dress. I know that guy has some Suzuki violin method in him at some point. You guys just stick him in a dress staring at the door, but, you know, he can't be playing the violin. All four of them, none of them can play violin. Terrible. Terrible.
I think the secret of your connection, Shy, is you have to just shout at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Perfect. Also.
We'll turn that into a bit. Shy shouts at things. Yeah. I would tune in for that.
It's time for another Shy Shouts.
My favorite moment was near the beginning when they're in engineering and Argyle and Riker completely ignoring him. Like, do you think we should let him try? Yes, I think we should. And Kaczynski flies off the handle. He's like, oh, yes, let him try. Yes, just talk about me like I'm not here. I'm like, that really actually made me like Kaczynski because, you know, they're obviously
the high strongness is a bit of charm. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I like the actor for what he does for that in the period. Like, he plays the part pretty well of, like, you know, like, I'm just winging it. And I feel offended by this. It's, you know, there's a lot of modern analogies that could be compared there.
My least favorite is, well, in general, the Wesley stuff, but specifically the Traveler can't say things until Wesley holds his hand, which, leave aside the connotation. I don't, there's nothing really there that bothers me. It's just, I'm so oversaturated with TV shows and movies where someone has a special secret about them and they have this special power that no one else has and that makes them special, and it's in everything these days, and I would like that to not be in everything. So you know, maybe that's just more modern stuff being saturated, but it's like he can be a really smart kid without him being the answer to everything. So
the you know, one day we'll get a film where the guy comes, yes, he's special, he's special, and it turns out the end of the film, no, he's normal, and now he's dead because you threw him into this situation. You monsters.
Yeah, you made him believe he could fly, and then when he jumped, that's when the film
ended.
He's not
the chosen one, Morpheus, for fuck's sake, this is the fifth time.
You guys are going in dark here. I don't like this. This is a bad movie that we're spitballing here.
All right. Okay. Stars, what is our rating? By the way, we had to cover for you fairly recently. And we came up with some good ones for the Lorelei signal, which was going to be completely out of context if you've not seen the episode. But I'd like to let you know that we came up, because we did the Lorelei signal and More Tribbles, More Troubles, which will be coming out later. The one for Lorelei signal was how many delicious and succulent glandular secretions. And and the More Troubles was how many quintriticole triple eating pocket glommers out of whatever. So please, what is our rating for Where No One Has Gone Before?
We've got a nice and simple one for this week. Gentlemen, how many Traveler Spirit Bombs out of 10 would you like to give this episode?
Traveler Spirit Bombs, yeah, that was pretty Goku moment. Okay, Shai, what have you got?
I'm going to give this a 7.
Ooh.
I think it's a solid first season sci-fi. I think they go where no one's gone before. You know, they get the holding hands and everyone send your energy to the chosen one trope out of the way. 7. Kaczynski's good. Yeah.
Okay. Auto.
Now, you guys have talked me up on this one, so... I was ready to bash it, and I did a little bit. I give this 3.9 Traveler Spirit Bombs out of 10.
Just call it 4.
And the reason is...
Just call it 4.
No. No, because if you go 4, your first thought is, oh, it's below average, but it's not that bad. It's close to average. No, it's not that good. No. It's a step below that, where it's actively starting to
bother
me. So call
it
3. Good. There, no, 3.9. Because I didn't hate... Look, I'm very precise in my measurements, all right?
Fine.
You're a basic integer bitch, and I'm a decimal kind of guy. No, there were some good concepts there, but the execution, whether because of era or whatever, was just bad. There were some really off... There were some references where we all looked at each other and went and, like, visibly cringed, and you can't have that in an average or better episode, in my opinion. So, 3.9. There's certainly worse things out there.
Stars.
Guess what? I'm going to have to annoy you and go for a non-integer as well. I'm going to give this 5.5 Traveler Spirit Bombs
out
of 10.
That's a halfway one. That's indecisive.
This is just above average. This is just above average for me, because it's like, it's not offensive in the way that a lot of Season 1 is. There are glimmerings of an idea. There are glimmerings of emotion. There are glimmerings of a dynamic. There are glimmerings of a character development.
Is glimmerings a word?
Yes.
Oh, okay. A glimmer in your eye, glimmerings, etc.
Oh, okay.
I'm making it a word. Guess what?
Fine.
I'm
that's
making
fine.
A statement.
We can invent words here.
Yeah, totally. Guess what? Shakespeare invented all those words. You didn't hear anyone saying, oh, that's not a word.
You said cromulent earlier, Idol.
That's
right. So.
No, that's a perfectly cromulent word. That's in the dictionary. It should be.
There are the beginnings of something here. Like, I feel like if you did this now, you would get a much better execution of the idea. And I like it less than Where No Man Has Gone Before, because I had a good amount of personal drama to get me invested in the story and was more ready to have a mature conversation about the concepts it was discussing. But this is fine. This is fine. Like, it's not as good as I remember it being, but it's not awful. 5.5.
A pure 6 for me. It's, like you say, it's it's fine. It's okay.
Perfectly cromulent.
Perfectly cromulent. I was entertained. There are a lot of things that are wrong with it. Like, like you say, it lingers on the point too much. There's a lot of talking, probably because of budget. The high concept sci-fi wasn't expanded on as much as I'd liked, but it was fine. We got a random jokey bit at the end, because every episode has to have an end on a happy note. But I enjoyed
Might as well have ended with the tears.
Pretty much, yeah. That's Wesley on the bridge. I'm not going to tell my mother now.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, okay, so that concludes our review of Where No One Has Gone Before. Join us in a couple of weeks and we will be talking about Babel, unless you're here right now watching it with us, in which case we're going to watch it in just a second. But join us in 2 weeks and we are going to be talking about DS9's very own Babel. But for now, live long and prosper.
Bread.
Bread.